Good morning. This meeting of the House Special Committee on Fisheries will come to order. The time is 11:06, Thursday, February 20th. Members present are Representative Christ Tompkins, Representative Kopp, Representative Vance, and myself, Chair Stutes. You know the drill. Please silence your cell phones and do not approach the table here if you need to get a message to any one of us sitting up here. Matt Greening, my aide, would be more than happy to give you a hand. I'd like to thank Jordan May, our committee secretary, and Brett Mello, the Juno, from the Juno, it's not Brett? From the, oh, it is, there he is. From the Juno LIO for technical and teleconferencing support. We do have a quorum for business. We originally had three agenda items, but the consideration of the governor's appointee, Marilyn Charles, to the Fisherman's Fund Advisory and Appeals Council has been postponed until Tuesday morning. That leaves us with House Bill 218, Saltwater Fishing Operators Guide by House Rules at the request of the governor, and House Bill 247, Sport Fishing Enhancement Surcharge, also by House Rules at the request of the governor. With that, up first, we have House Bill 218, Saltwater Fishing Operators Guides. This is the third hearing on this bill, and I would like to see it move from committee today. We've received two amendments from Representative Christ Tompkins. I would note that available for questions on this bill and the amendments, we have Lieutenant Matthew Dobson from the Alaska State Troopers, Aaron Peterson from the Department of Law, Rachel Baker, Deputy Commissioner, Department of Fish and Game, in the room, and Tom Taub in the room. He is a Deputy Director of the Division of Sport Fish and Assistant Director of the Division of Sport Fish, Brian Frenette. Thank you all for coming. let's see here. So with that, I would ask Representative Christ Tompkins for a motion.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move amendment number one.
And I will object for purposes of discussion, and we have the sponsor's staff, Erin Harrington, here to explain amendment one. Welcome, Representative Tarr. Thank you. Ms. Harrington, please join us. Identify yourself and your affiliation for the record, and if you would explain the amendment to us, please.
Good morning, Madam Chair and committee members. My name is Erin Harrington, and I am staff to Representative Christ Tompkins. Amendment number one adds the requirement that people applying for the licenses under this bill, HB 218, simply certify their residency. Resident or non-resident. It's a data point to help us understand the characteristics of this economic activity, this sector of participation.
Thank you. Do we have questions from this committee? Representative Vance.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I asked this of the maker of the amendment prior, but I just wanted it on record of asking why are you choosing to have the language say sign a sworn statement identifying whether the person is a state resident or non-resident versus having proof of residency such as a driver's license.
Representative Vance, through the chair, I can use the example of our own sport fish license applications. When we fill them out, they are a sworn document. We sign them. We put in whether or not we're a resident, typically the date that our residency began, that is essentially considered suitable. That's a certification thereof. Does that answer your question, or is it more refined than that?
Follow up,
Representative.
So does the burden lie on the department in regulation to define what is suitable?
Thank you. Representative Vance, through the chair. Yes, we would anticipate that in the regulatory process, in the designing of this application, that the department would determine what is suitable. I use that example. I don't know that that's exactly how they'll make it look, but it's something that's familiar to us and something that we understand to be put in place by the department to follow a directive that's in the statute.
All right, thank you.
Thank you. Are there other questions? Do we have any comments from the department on amendment number one?
Madam Chair, for the record, Tom Taube, Deputy Director with the Division of Sportfish. Specific to the amendment, the first line item on line five, we really don't have any comment on that. Similar to Representative Vance's comment on the sworn statement, this is addition on page three, line eight.
Are you looking at amendment one?
Yes, I'm looking at amendment one, and then looking at the actual House Bill 218.
Okay.
Prior to that, we have that the requirement is to hold a sport fishing license from the state. So they already are signing an affidavit that says they're a resident or non-resident with that sport fish license. So there seems to be some duplication with that second portion of that amendment.
Thank you. Any comments from the sponsor?
At ease.
Brief at ease. Record. Ms. Harrington.
Again, for the record, Erin Harrington, staff to Representative Chris Tompkins. The conversation that we were just having with the representative from the department is, as he was saying, the department does, this person has to have a sport fish license. We know that. And that sport fish license does describe whether or not that person is a resident. But that is a separate piece of information living in a separate data house. Yes, the department would collect both of them, but what we're looking for is being able to clearly understand the characteristics of this sector of participants in the industry. And in conversation with the department, with that clarification, I don't want to personally put their support on the record, but my understanding is that was a distinction that was understandable.
Thank you. Maybe the department would like to come up and add their own firsthand.
Madam Chair, based on the discussion, the department supports the amendment.
Thank you. Thank you for that. Are there any other questions from this committee? Being no further questions, I will remove my objection. Are there further objections? And with that, amendment number one is adopted. There is one further amendment to consider. Representative Chris Tompkins, may I have a motion, please?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move amendment number two.
And I will object for the purposes of discussion. And with that, Ms. Harrington, if you would come up, identify yourself, and explain amendment number two to us, please.
Madam Chair, committee members, again, Erin Harrington, staff to Representative Chris Tompkins. Amendment number two attempts to begin to put some information in place to address this nebulous area that you have recently been discussing in committee of unguided rental boats. It is the perception in the public and among managers that there may be growth in this subsection of the sector. But as it stands right now, there is no data collected that helps us describe that growth or the characteristics of that sector. This is a conversation that has been going on at the North Pacific Council as well. And the North Pacific Council has an analysis by their staff looking into this problem, looking into this issue, I should say, and trying to get arms wrapped around how to best begin to understand the sector. For perspective, this is most important with regards to halibut. And as those of you on this committee know, halibut is a highly managed, highly regulated fishery. It's also a fully allocated fishery. Participation in that fishery happens from commercial boats. It also happens in a commercial guided sector. And then it happens when people get a sport fishing license and go out and harvest halibut. The concern is that with the increase in this subsector of people renting boats to go out and do unguided harvesting, that there may be significant growth in what is ultimately a commercial access point to the resource that isn't being quantified or able to be described for purposes of figuring out how to work that into the management scheme. So this amendment attempts to begin to collect some baseline data to describe that sector of participation in the commercial use of this resource. So, to speak specifically to the amendment proposes to do a few things, and there is something specific that it does not propose to do. So it does not propose to enumerate the fish that are harvested from a boat. This is not a logbook, we're not counting. What it does propose is to get information about the businesses that are renting the boats, those who are renting the boats and going out, what to confirm that they in fact have sport fishing licenses, and to determine whether or not fishing is happening from those vessels while they're rented. To speak anecdotally, in a conversation that I've had in the last few days with a very well-informed member of the guided charter sector, this individual let me know that just a single business that he's familiar with, and the owner of this business he's friendly with, that that owner shared that just this year they've bought 10 additional boats for use by their business in the small Southeast Alaska village where they operate. So for a sense of scale, 10 additional boats, you know, being fully utilized over the course of a week could add as many as, say, like 80 angler days. And when you add that up across all of the businesses and regions of the state, you can't understand how something like that would begin to have an impact on a resource that is, you know, highly regulated and highly managed, not only by the state of Alaska, but by the state in partnership with the federal government and also through treaty with Canada. So this amendment attempts to begin to put some understanding around what that actually looks like.
Thank you. We have questions? Representative Vance.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I always have questions. You mentioned this would only collect data of how many are offering this service in the gear. And why not the fish count? Because it is, you know, a limited resource. Isn't that the purpose of the bill? And keeping track, why provide the oversight if it doesn't have the purpose of the count attached to it?
Representative Vance, through the chair, that's an excellent question. This amendment, we view it as a stair step. So I think while ultimately it would be an objective to understand the full scope of the participation in this fishery, including the harvest, retention, you know, all of the associated information with that. The purpose of this amendment is as a first step in that direction. Those larger programs are vastly complex, and there are a lot of resources that are required to bring them to bear. And so we view this as a first step.
Madam. Representative Chris Tompkins.
Just a quick comment to add to Ms. Harrington's answer. I think just as you said, sort of a starting point, I totally agree with you, or what I think might be the subtext of your question, that in a perfect world, all equal, it'd be really great to know how many halibut are being caught by the unguided charter sector. But I think sort of in deference to not, I mean, there's a lot more administrative complexity if you're taking account of every single halibut that's being caught and how to do that and conversation with the sector. Just don't want to go all the way there, but just sort of start with a very basic level of data is sort of the thinking.
Follow up. So along that line of questioning, because the bill is requiring charters to do a logbook, and these businesses are essentially unguided charters. Would that be an accurate description? So what's the additional burden to require the unguided charters to do a logbook program in the same venue as the guided charters?
Representative Vance, through the chair, that's a great question. I think one of the things that this amendment would allow us to do is to begin to understand the characteristics of this sector. And for example, a boat that was being rented out and used for sport fishing could be happening through Airbnb. It could be happening through a club of some sort. It could be happening, someone has a cabin, a remote cabin, and there's a skiff that's pulled up in the weeds outside of it, and that is somehow incorporated and, you know, people going out. It could be kayaks. It's a complex world. And so getting to the point of being able to understand it well enough to then implement a rational regulatory or reporting scheme, this is the first step that allows us to start to say, what does this look like? Are we talking on the scale of 10,000 vessels? Are we talking on the scale of 200? We know it's more than 200, but what are the characteristics of it? And then that information lends itself to that next step that would then, I think, answer your question of why couldn't they just do a logbook? I think many of those businesses, or at least some of them, could be set up in ways that look quite different from a guided operation, where perhaps there isn't a person who's there at the shore who's consulting with the client. And we want to be able to understand some of that so we can move forward from there.
One more follow-up question.
Thank you.
So is the deeper question that I think us as a body has to dig into is the distinction between personal use and regulation of the personal use versus the non-guided, and defining that, I think that's probably the deeper issue that Alaskans are going to pay attention to, that as we embark on this, not infringing upon Alaskans' right to go get halibut, but at the same time being responsible for the allocation of that resource, that we kind of want to count every fish because we're not in the times of plenty anymore in regards to our halibut. And going down this road, I think that might be the bigger question, if and you can confirm if I'm on the right track here, that might be part of that stair step, as you mentioned.
Representative Vance, through the chair, I understand your question, and I think that the answer might be just one half a step to the side. But first, recognizing that what you're saying, that the importance of Alaskans and non-Alaskans being able to go out and harvest, be it halibut, be it salmon, be it rockfish in a sport fishing environment, that's something that we want to see continuing to happen, that it's important. But where you went, where you were talking about the allocative aspect, I think that is really, that's the sidestep, and that's the track to think of it, of this on, because the other two sectors of commercial participation in the harvest of halibut, but also the other sectors that are commercially participating in the harvest of salmon, of rockfish, we know a lot about them, and we ask a lot of them. We ask that they be accountable for what they're harvesting. We ask that they participate in processes that allocate back and forth between them, that goes through intentional deliberation. And it's all arrived at with a tremendous amount of effort, negotiation, and attention to the science. And if we have a sector that's coming into that and is beginning to take more and more of that resource without needing to be responsible to the allocation process, that negotiation process, that commitment to the scientific process, we would like to invite them into that conversation.
Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Kopp.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And thank you, Aaron, for your explanation of the amendment. Appreciate the knowledge base that you bring to this, and I guess the credit also goes to Representative Tompkins for such great staff. Aaron, so on this amendment, has this been run by the Kenai River Sport Fish? And this is what I'm thinking. The lower 4 miles of the river are saltwater, sport fishing, and often guides are involved in bringing, so the boats are rented. Guides are bringing people down for personal use, dip netting, and it gets really complicated. I haven't even quite figured out in my head how all that happens, but I just wanted to make sure we're not accidentally doing something here that would inadvertently impact that. And they provide a great service. A lot more personal use fish are taken because they're actually able to rent those boats and be professionally guided and and the guide boats actually help keep the chaos down on the river. I'll give them a pat on the head for that. I just wanted to make sure if you've talked with them at all about this.
Representative Kopp, through the chair. The answer to your question is no, not yet. Okay. We are in receipt of this amendment quite recently and have been working through the nuances of it quite recently. So no, the answer is no, not yet.
Okay, and then one more follow-up.
Follow-up?
When I review the amendment, it looks like we could delete lines 14 and 15 and still meet the intent of the amendment, because it's titled, you know, new section, report from unguided rental boats, because we're asking the person who's renting the boat to record information. I'm sorry, lines 16 and 17, we're asking them to record the information but not do anything with it. And then in lines 18 through 21, we're asking the person who is actually receiving the money for renting the boat to actually take that information, probably responsible for recording it as well, but also reporting it to the department. But we really don't tell the person who is renting the boat to go fishing what to do. We're just saying you're required to record it, but it's only the person who is on the money receiving end for compensation that is to take that record and report it to the department. So it seems like on one end, this person is recording information, but really, what do they do with it? It's just in their hand. And on the other end, the person who's receiving the money is getting the same information, but reporting to the department. So through the chair, what's your thought on that, or the bill sponsor, who?
Representative Kopp, through the chair. Or perhaps Representative Chris Hawkins.
I'd be amenable to the conversation. Yeah. I mean, I think there's various aspects. I mean, just to speak to this amendment more broadly, that, I mean, we definitely want to fine tune. And I think the point you make, also the Kenai River sports fishing point, which is well beyond my region and sort of would not have been a two dots I immediately connected, but there's that sort of estuary, I guess, half saltwater, half freshwater areas is also another good flag for us to look into. Yeah.
Representative Tarr.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And just appreciate the effort to understand this issue a little bit more and get data for it. I guess my question is more to the cost associated with it. And I had been thinking about this more generally about the bill, because the fiscal note shows that it brings in $400,000 of revenue and it spends $400,000. And so it's like every penny is accounted for. And the way the amendment is written, that the department shall collect this information, I'm just curious if, you know, they would anticipate additional staff necessary, or like the volume of workload that would be associated with this, and then whether the resources were provided, and perhaps adjustment to the proposed fees could, you know, accommodate having a little more resources to collect this information. But it seems like trying to understand that now might help, you know, going forward, because it seems like, and maybe I'm thinking this a little too deeply, but that this would require just, you know, some focus by a person from the department, because it wouldn't just be a handful, I wouldn't think. I think there would be some pretty significant data to collect and understand.
And if I may,
certainly.
Sure. I think it's a great point, Representative Tarr. We had the opportunity to talk with the department yesterday, and they were gracious with sharing sort of perspective on what this might look administratively, and also sort of thinking what the value of data collection is, and also like what I think importantly ultimate end goals might be in from a management and data collection perspective. So I think sort of consistent with a couple of the points raised by Representative Kopp, another area that we're excited to further sort of tune and vet and iterate the amendment.
Other comments? With that, I think this amendment could be very helpful in understanding the scope of activities related to bareboat charters, which is particularly pertinent in our halibut fisheries. However, I also understand that the language needs a little fine-tuning and that Representative Kreis Tompkins is going to work with the appropriate individuals to do that. And so what I'm hoping to do is allow him to do that in the next committee that this bill would go to. So with that, I believe Representative Kreis Tompkins has
yes.
a motion.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This is going to be a shocker to everybody in the room. I'm going to withdraw amendment number two. But I appreciate the department putting eyes on it and committee's feedback. I mean, I think this is something we're really excited to dig into, but we want to get it right. And I think there's a bit more work before we've got it right.
Oh, we appreciate that. Are there any other comments from this committee on this bill? Representative Tarr?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I was just going to comment that this bill does come to resources after, and so I'd be happy to continue the conversation for any interested parties that are listening and watching now.
So with that, I would certainly, if there are no more comments from this committee, I would entertain a motion.
Madam Chair.
Representative Kopp.
I move to report House Bill 218-31-GH2192/A as amended out of committee with individual recommendations and attached fiscal note.
Are there any objections? Hearing no objections, this House Bill 218 as amended moves from this committee. And with that, I will take a brief at ease. Welcome back. We are back on record. And up next, we will have House Bill 247, Sport Fishing Enhancement Surcharge by House Rules at the request of the governor. This is the introductory hearing on this bill, and my intent is to have the Department of Fish and Game present the bill, hold a committee discussion, and set the bill aside for further review. Online to present the bill, we have Commissioner Doug Vincent Lang from the Department of Fish and Game. Available for questions, we have Dave Rutz, Director of the Division of Sport Fish, Aaron Peterson from the Department of Law, Tom Tobby, am I saying that right?
Yes.
Deputy Director of Sport Fish, and Brian Frenette from Sport Fish. So with that, Commissioner, if you would identify yourself for the record and tell us a little bit about the bill.
My name is Doug. Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, my name is Doug Vincent Lang, and I'm the Commissioner for the Alaska Department of Fish and Game. I apologize for not being there with you in person. I'm attending to my duties as a Salmon Commissioner for the Pacific Salmon Treaty, and we're in the midst of discussing several issues regarding funding and Taku sockeye that require my attention. First, I would like to thank you for hearing this piece of legislation so quickly. It is a department priority for this session. In 2005, the legislature approved a bond measure to construct two sport fish hatcheries, the William Jack Fernandez Hatchery in Anchorage and the Ruth Burnett Hatchery in Fairbanks. I am proud to have been personally involved in the design of the construction and financing of these bills and eventual passage of the bill that allowed the construction of these. In order to receive the bond, the Department of Fish and Game crafted a repayment plan that was unprecedented. The surcharge was added to a sport fishing licenses, all of which went directly to the repayment of a bond less $500,000 annually for hatchery production in Southeast Alaska. Average collection from 2013 to 2018 was $6.4 million. Most of the surcharge was levied to non-resident anglers. No general funds were used for the repayment of the bond under this unprecedented strategy. The bonds would be paid for entirely by sport anglers, the primary benefactors of the hatcheries. It is important to note that $500,000 a year out of the surcharge was dedicated to production to support sport fishing in Southeast Alaska. This was done recognizing that part of the license fees would be collected from anglers only fishing in Southeast Alaska. This allowed hatchery production to be expanded in Southeast Alaska, which is critical given the status of Southeast Alaska king salmon stocks. Significant sport fishing opportunities are provided through these stocking efforts that are funded through the surcharge. The plan has worked so well that the department is paying this bond back 5 years early, calendar year 2020. A promise was made at the inception of the bond that this surcharge would go away after the bond was paid. And as a result, the surcharge and all associated statutes are repealed at the end of the calendar year in which this will be paid off. I made that promise when I was part of the bill. And remembering that promise, while realizing that this funding source could do to maintain our hatchery operations, I am now proposing a compromise and a reduction to what is currently being collected, $5 across the board. This leaves residents with a $4 surcharge and non-residents contributing the lion's share, over six times what residents contribute. And I think you have a spreadsheet in your packet that you can look at to look at how the surcharge would be collected. This is approximately a 34% reduction, recognizing that the hatcheries are now paid off. Additionally, the department proposes to collect that surcharge in a separate account within the Fish and Game Fund to be accounted for and used only for the state's Sport Fish Enhancement Program and the Sport Fish Hatchery Facilities. Upon repayment of bond debt, there is an immediate $500,000 funding impact to Southeast Alaska from the loss of the surcharge income, which funds the raising and release of over 1.4 million Chinook salmon smolt at release sites targeting to benefit sport anglers in Southeast Alaska inside waters. Losing this level of funding to support existing enhancement activities will be detrimental to the Southeast Alaska sport anglers. As you can see from the fact sheet in your packets, the sport fish enhancement programs released nearly 7.2 million fish into nearly 270 locations annually, in addition to the 1.4 million in Southeast Alaska. When the Ruth Barnett and William Jack Hernandez came online, nearly $5 million of DJ funds had to be redirected in order to pay for their operations and maintenance. Any needed repairs and maintenance to this date have come from existing operational budget funds and is usually done so at the expense of other divisional needs. There are also several larger, more expensive needs that were to be deferred during construction and have yet to be addressed. As facilities age, the maintenance needs will grow, thus putting further undue burden onto the existing programs. Having the ability to tap into a source of funds to cover these needs will allow the department to sustain the enhanced production without impacting activities elsewhere. There is, on average, 6.4 million generated revenue from surcharge collections on sport fishing licenses. The division currently allocates a little over 7 million to enhancement related programs and projects across the division, with most tied to operations and maintenance at the two large facilities in Fairbanks and Anchorage. Establishing this new pared down enhancement surcharge would cover existing costs allocated towards the enhancement program and allow the ability to put old programs and projects back in place. It would also address deferred maintenance and equipment needs and ensure contingency funding are available for unforeseen events at these facilities without having to go to the legislature for supplemental or worst-case shutdown of the facility. It would also, most importantly, allow the continuation of the Southeast Alaska hatchery production, which is so important to the Southeast Alaska sport anglers. With that, I am available for questions, and again, thank the committee for hearing this bill so quickly. And if the committee would like, Ms. Hanke is also prepared to go over the sectional analysis. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. I would first like to mention that we have Devin Mitchell, who is the debt manager for the Department of Revenue, here with us for questions as well. Thank you for coming. We will go over the sectional, but I have a question right off the top, Commissioner. And you're decreasing this amount from $9 to $4. And that seems a little odd to me, considering every year the Department of Fish and Game's budget is reduced. Why not add this $5 and keep it within the department, and it could be used for fisheries management and for deferred maintenance concerns? I guess I'm a little confused as to what the objective is here.
Madam Chair, that's probably me. I was part of the original people that crafted the legislation to to put this surcharge in place, and I made a commitment that when the bonds would be paid off, the surcharge would go away. And I think we need to follow through on commitments we made early on in trying to ensure people that if we make promises regarding bond payments, that we at least partially try to fulfill that requirement moving forward. So we've tried to strike a compromise here that allows us to continue the important aspects of Southeast Alaska hatchery production and to provide maintenance and long-term operations of the facilities while still following through to the extent we could in reducing that surcharge amount and fulfilling that original commitment.
Commissioner, I truly appreciate that, and I appreciate the idea that you want to follow through, but as you can see, times are changing, and with the funding for the department continually being reduced, that seems to be a huge issue. And I appreciate the fact that you made the commitment, but this something like this, I believe, is really up to the legislative body to determine. So that's just my opinion, and certainly it has its route to run, but I personally would like to see these dollars stay within the department and be utilized for what they need to be utilized, and that's the management of this fishery. But with that, we have questions here. Representative Tarr?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just wanted to agree with your statements because we have really affordable prices. We just went through with House Bill 137 and made some adjustments, and there wasn't, you know, any pushback from residents on those adjustments that included the surcharge. And so I think just that knowing how important our fisheries are to all Alaskans, want to make sure that they have the resources necessary. And so I'd be more supportive and kind of more in line with your thinking that just we really need to have the resources and that since our fees are modest at this time, that we don't need to go too much lower than that.
Thank you, Representative Tarr. Representative Vance.
I didn't want to cut in line with the other, but for the sake of people listening, are these fees to continue in perpetuity, or do they have a sunset date?
Through the chair, the way the bill is written, they would continue on in perpetuity.
Follow up.
Or
an additional question is, if the fees were maintained at the current level, does the revenues collected stay specifically within the sport fish division, or do you have the discretion to be able to use it in the department as needed?
Through the chair, the way the bill is constructed, any funds collected through the surcharge would go into a sub-account of the Fish and Game Fund, which would be dedicated to the activities as specified, which is basically operations and maintenance of the hatcheries and allowing the production of Southeast Alaska to continue.
Follow up. So obviously there are other hatcheries throughout Alaska besides Southeast. Does this bill address all of the hatcheries or just Southeast?
It would allow Southeast Alaska production to increase. And I guess if to the extent that we saw needs in other areas of the state for sport fishing support, since the fees are collected from sport fishing, I guess we could look at those on a case-by-case basis. But it would basically go to the operation and maintenance of the two facilities, Ruth Barnett and Jack Fernandez hatcheries, which provide fish for much of South Central and the Rail Belt in Alaska, including Kodiak. In Southeast Alaska, we didn't really ship fish down there, so we saw this as an opportunity to work with PNPs down there to provide those fishing opportunities in Southeast Alaska, since revenues were being collected from sport fishermen in those areas.
Thank you for that. I have some comments for the committee whenever it's appropriate.
Okay. Representative Chris Tompkins.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I had a question for the commissioner or whomever from the department, which is looking at the license fee schedule, end of page 2, start of page 3. I was interested if the resident non-resident differential has to work within constitutional parameters. I know in Comfish, this is the Carlson case, and interstate commerce and privileges and immunities govern a lot of what the state can and cannot do in terms of higher non-resident rates. And on the sports fish side, I was wondering what the legal or constitutional parameters the legislature has to work within when looking at rate differentials between residents and non-residents.
Through the chair, when we originally put this bill together, we had talked to law about the split between resident and non-resident. We were told that we couldn't have only a non-resident fee. That would violate the law, but the agreement we came up with in terms of the percentage breakdown between non-resident residents under the existing surcharge was allowed. The new surcharges are step downs from that, and I guess we could ask law again, but I think they would be permissible. I think it would probably be unpermissible to only have a surcharge in non-resident licenses.
Follow up. Representative Chris Tompkins.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I appreciate the answer, Commissioner Vincent Lang. Answer noted, and could take this offline, and realizing the potential legal import of what's put on the record and statements made on the record, if and when there might be future litigation, maybe best that we converse further offline. But there's a big spectrum between having a non-resident fee and no fee at all for residents, and the differential or ratio between resident and non-resident fees. In the Carlson case, set a quantitative ratio that the state had to work within, and so I'm wondering if there's legal guidance to that end for the rate differential between residents and non-residents. And I might just say I'd be interested in taking that conversation offline, and no further need to put that on the record.
Thank you. Do we have other questions?
Yes.
If we could very quickly go through the sectional.
Madam Chair?
Yes, certainly.
This is Doug. Do you have any more questions for me? I have to get down to a bilateral meeting otherwise.
Oh, sure. You probably want to go get lunch.
I wish.
No, I don't believe so. Do we have any other questions? No, you're free for lunch.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair.
You're welcome. Ms. Hankey.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, Rachel Hankey, Legislative Liaison for the Department of Fish and Game. Section 1 of this bill created the enterprise account, which, as the Commissioner stated, collects surcharge revenue for the bond repayment. So this is amended to remove all that bond language and to create the new sub-account within the Fish and Game Fund, which is the Sport Fishing Enhancement Account. It also allocates the revenue to sport fishing facilities to be used only for enhancement programs and facility maintenance. The second section of this bill is the licensing section 1605340, and it's where you see the surcharge, as you guys mentioned earlier, for residents and non-resident sport fishing licenses. Section 3, the section being repealed here, removed a reference to the 340J section, which we're now keeping in statute, so going back and undoing that repeal there. Section 4, this is a repealing section from Chapter 18, SLA 2016 as well, which is amended to allow that 130E and AS 1605340J to remain in statute beyond the sunset date. Section 5 is similar to Section 3, makes a similar amendment to retain the reference to 340J. Section 6 is the transition language that states any funds remaining in the enterprise account after the bonds are satisfied will be transferred to that new account. Section 7 and 9, together, they give Sections 1 and 2 an effective date of January 1, 2021. And then Section 8, also similar to 3 and 5, just fixes another reference to 340J. And the remaining sections have an immediate effective date.
Thank you. Do we have any questions?
Yes.
You do?
Yes.
Representative Vance.
Thank you, Madam Chair. In relation to the discussion of the fees and if it were the intent of this body to keep the fees at the current level to expand revenue, It says that the fund would be for sport fishing enhancement. And we know that as specifically the hatcheries. Would the modernization of the app that Fish and Game is working on be inclusive of sport fish enhancement?
Through the chair, Representative Vance, I would say no, but I would ask that Deputy Director Taube come up just to make sure that I'm not incorrect on that one.
If I may clarify my thought on that, Madam Chair.
Certainly.
And the reason I ask that is in talking with the department of some of the hopes of what the app will do is obviously this is far out in the future of the hope of what the app can do is provide anglers live access of when you're standing in the river, it can show you what fish you can and cannot fish at that time in the river. And so in my mind, that's why I jumped to this saying, is this part of the enhancement? Because to me, that is an enhanced service for sport fishing, but I understand the legalities of being able to use the funds and just trying to understand the scope of what our options are in the purpose of these fees to make the experience more useful for the users.
Madam Chair, Representative Vance, the way the current language is written, the enhancement component is related to hatchery production. So I don't think that would apply to, you know, app development and covering the cost of developing the app. So, I mean, some of those fisheries that the app would provide access to would be stocked fish. So, you know, I'm not a lawyer, so I would prefer to ask our, you know, Department of Law to weigh in on that, whether as written that would cover, you know, app cost development on there or anything outside of any hatchery related expenditures.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you.
Are there other questions? Seeing none, thank you. Thank you for coming. Thank you for the sectional. And if there are no further comments, we will set this bill aside for further review. We will update the committee members later today when we have finalized our schedule for next week and what we will be doing. So with that, seeing no further business to come before this committee, I will adjourn at 11:58 February 20th. Thank you everyone for coming.